So not long ago, I read the classic adventure story known as Gulliver's Travels by Jonathan Swift, published around 1726. And if you're unfamiliar, Gulliver's Travels is a satire fiction that largely pokes fun and criticizes a lot of the absurdities of society and man's fallen human nature that Swift just saw so evidently on display in his own time. I find it really quite ironic because a lot of what he gives attention to in the story, I think, is very reminiscent of things happening in our own day. But in addition to being an author, Swift was a clergyman in the Church of Ireland, which is the Irish branch of the Anglican Church. And as a clergyman, one of the things that really started to bother him was a gradual decay of Christianity that he saw taking place in the culture around him. And a continued erosion, it seems, of man's sense of morality. And all of that he saw on open display in the increasing corruption of the powerful, the adoption of humanist enlightenment thinking, the brutal divisiveness of people on both sides of an issue, and actually government-run education in which we allow the state to brainwash our kids. I found that to be an interesting criticism by Swift, and he mentions so much more than that. But basically, Jonathan Swift saw the whole of mankind, and yes, that included his sophisticated European brethren, acting like a bunch of yahoos, which he incorporates into his story, actually calling them yahoos, as this character arc of society, where man is shown to end up, isn't as honored stewards of the earth or the chiefest of God's creation, but we lead ourselves to live like a pack of animals. Because the longer we act like animals and the longer we treat one another like animals, the more God gives us up to live like animals. And it reminds me so much of Romans chapter 1. What does Romans 1 say? It says, therefore God gave them up in the lusts of their hearts to impurity. He gave them up to dishonorable passions. He gave them up to a debased mind to do what ought not be done. That is man's depraved trajectory. But then before the story gets to that final stage of man's corruption as slaves of corruption in the land of the Winims, or I think the way that's supposed to be said is the more like a horse, the Winims. And if you want to know what that's all about, you've got to read the book. But the adventure begins with Gulliver getting lost at sea and shipwrecking at the land of the Lilliputians, who are another European-like society of men, only 6 inches tall, and to them Gulliver is just a giant. And so finding Gulliver passed out one day on the beach after his shipwreck, these Lilliputians, these 6-inch tall people, with an army, they managed to capture him and move him into their city where they try to learn more about him, just as Gulliver uses the opportunity to learn more about them. And throughout that whole process, both Gulliver and the Lilliputians are just humored by the silliness of each other's customs and habits. Swift obviously using that to make jabs at some of the craziness of the customs that are caricatured, that those customs caricature in the real world. But at one point, the Lilliputians search Gulliver's pockets to see what kind of things that he's carrying around. And how the scene unfolds is, as they search his pockets, they find Gulliver's pocket watch, which is apparently a gadget that is uncommon, unfamiliar, non-existent in Lilliput. And here's how that scene unfolds. Out of the right fob, that is the right pocket, hung a great silver chain with a wonderful kind of engine at the bottom. We directed him, that's Gulliver, to draw out whatever was at the end of that chain, which appeared to be a globe, half silver and half of some transparent metal. For on the transparent side, we saw certain strange figures circularly drawn and thought we could touch them. we found our fingers stopped with that lucid substance. They're just describing the glass front on the watch. He put this engine to our ears, which made an incessant noise like that of a water mill, and we conjecture it is either some unknown animal or the god that he worships. But we are more inclined to the latter opinion because he assured us, if we understood him right, for he expressed himself very imperfectly, that he seldom did anything without consulting it. He called it his oracle and said it pointed out the time for every action of his life. Think about that. It must be the man's God, for he seldom does anything without consulting it. It points out the time for every action of his life. Apparently, one of the silly habits that Swift saw common in his own 18th century society was the obsessive, nearly idolatrous habit of people constantly checking their pocket watches to prompt them on what they should be doing at that time or where they should be at a particular time of day. It was as if the pocket watch, as great of an invention as it was beginning to dictate everyone's morning to evening activities, so much so that an outside observer would assume that the watch must be a person's god because of the level of attention and devotion he's giving to it. Does that not sound so much like our culture today with everyone constantly checking their smartphones? As soon as we get up, what do? We tend to check our phones. Before we go to bed, what do? We check our phones one more time. While sitting at stoplights, people are checking their phones. While standing in elevators, checking their phones. While sitting down for a meal, they check their phones. I imagine for some, even while using the restroom, they are checking their phones. And one has to wonder, what would an outside observer assume about us? Would they assume our phones must be our gods because of how much attention we give to them? Or would they assume, like I hope they would, that our phones are just a tool? Just a tool, like any of the other items in our pockets that can benefit our lives, but that don't control our lives. It's convicting to me because it makes me evaluate how the time I actually do give in actual worship to the Lord compares to the time I give meditating on my phone. I've had to ask myself, how do my prayers, my Bible reading, my time spent in devotion to the Lord measure against the time I spend repetitively scrolling through my news feed? I've had to ask myself, what does the time spent on my phone say to those around me, including my kids? What does it say to my kids who see me more than anyone else sees me? They see me behind closed doors. What does it say to them about where my true devotions lie? I mean, according to Deuteronomy 6, I should be loving God so much that my kids hear me diligently dwelling on the things of God, quote, when I sit in my house, when I walk by the way, when I lie down, when I rise. Instead, what do they see? What do they say? I'm ashamed to say it, but oftentimes they see me diligently checking social media. I mentioned Romans 1 earlier. Romans 1 verse 24 says, therefore God gave them up in the lusts of their hearts to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature. Or we could say the created thing rather than the creator. Folks, what are our phones but created things that if we're not careful, can start to capture our attention and captivate our gaze more than God does? I'm not anti-technology by any means. In fact, I'm using technology to make this video. Most of you are watching this video using your smartphones. Praise God for modern inventions like these that can, to some degree, make our lives a little easier. But listen, the moment we regard the creation higher than the creator and we go about religiously consuming ourselves with it, we're just sliding further down the slippery slope of idolatry like the culture in Jonathan Swift's day, and we end up living like a bunch of mindless yahoos. Unplug your phones every once in a while and connect with God. Instead of checking your notifications 50 times a day, check in with God. See what He's already tweeted about in His Word. I guarantee it's worth more of your time than your favorite blogger. It's definitely worth more of your time than watching this video right now. So with that, I'll end things there and encourage you to have a fruitful day. Keep a close watch on your habits and keep an even closer eye on God. Thanks for watching, and God bless.